At the upper end of the fairground in Winesburg, there is a half-decayed old grandstand. It has never been painted, and the boards are all warped out of shape. The fairground stands on top of a low hill, rising out of the valley of Wine Creek. And from the grandstand, one can see at night, over a cornfield, the lights of the town reflected against the sky. George and Helen climb the hill to the fairground, coming by the path past Waterworks Pond. The feeling of loneliness and isolation that had come to the young man in the crowded streets of his town was both broken and intensified by the presence of Helen. What he felt was reflected in her. In youth, there are always two forces fighting in people. The warm, unthinking little animal struggles against the thing that reflects and remembers, and the older, the more sophisticated thing had possession of George Willard. Sensing his mood, Helen walked beside him, filled with respect. When they got to the grandstand, they climbed up under the roof and sat down on one of the long bench-like seats. There is something memorable in the experience to be had by going into a fairground that stands at the edge of a Middle Western town on a night after the annual fair has been held. The sensation is one never to be forgotten. On all sides are ghosts, not of the dead, but of living people. Here, during the day just past, have come the people pouring in from the town and the country around. Farmers with their wives and children, and all the people from the hundreds of little frame houses have gathered within these board walls. Young girls have laughed, and men with beards have talked of the affairs of their lives. The place has been filled to overflowing with life. It has itched and squirmed with life, and now it is night, and the life has all gone away. The silence is almost terrifying. One conceals oneself, standing silently beside the trunk of a tree, and what there is of a reflective tendency in his nature is intensified. One shudders at the thought of the meaninglessness of life, while at the same instant, and if the people of the town are his people, one loves life so intensely that tears come into the eyes. In the darkness under the roof of the grandstand, George Willard sat beside Helen White, and felt very keenly his own insignificance in the scheme of existence. Now that he had come out of town, where the presence of the people stirring about, busy with a multitude of affairs, had been so irritating, the irritation was all gone. The presence of Helen renewed and refreshed him. It was as though her woman's hand was assisting him to make some minute readjustment of the machinery of his life. He began to think of the people in the town where he had always lived with something like reverence. He had reverence for Helen. He wanted to love and to be loved by her, but he did not want at the moment to be confused by her womanhood. In the darkness, he took hold of her hand, and when she crept close, put a hand on her shoulder. A wind began to blow, and he shivered. With all his strength, he tried to hold and to understand the mood that had come upon him. In that high place in the darkness, the two oddly sensitive human atoms held each other tightly and waited. In the mind of each was the same thought. I have come to this lonely place, and here is this other, was the substance of the thing felt. In Winesburg, the crowded day had run itself out into the long night of the late fall. Farm horses jogged away along lonely country roads, pulling their portion of weary people. Clerks began to bring samples of goods in off the sidewalks and lock the doors of stores. In the opera house, a crowd had gathered to see a show, and further down Main Street, the fiddlers, their instruments tuned, sweated and worked to keep the feet of youth flying over a dance floor. In the darkness in the grandstand, Helen White and George Willard remained silent. Now and then the spell that held them was broken, and they turned and tried in the dim light to see into each other's eyes. They kissed, but that impulse did not last. At the upper end of the fairground, A half dozen men worked over horses that had raced during the afternoon. The men had built a fire and were heating kettles of water. Only their legs could be seen as they passed back and forth in the light. When the wind blew, the little flames of the fire danced crazily about. George and Helen arose and walked away into the darkness. They went along a path past a field of corn that had not yet been cut. The wind whispered among the dry corn blades. For a moment, during the walk back into town, the spell that held them was broken. When they had come to the crest of Waterworks Hill, they stopped by a tree, and George again put his hands on the girl's shoulders. She embraced him eagerly, and then again they drew quickly back from that impulse. They stopped kissing and stood a little apart. Mutual respect grew big in them. They were both embarrassed, and to relieve their embarrassment, dropped into the animalism of youth. They laughed and began to pull and haul at each other. In some way, chastened and purified by the mood they had been in, they became not man and woman, not boy and girl, but excited little animals. It was so they went down the hill. In the darkness, they played like two splendid young things in a young world. Once, running swiftly forward, Helen tripped George and he fell. He squirmed and shouted. Shaking with laughter, he rolled down the hill. Helen ran after him. For just a moment, she stopped in the darkness. There is no way of knowing what woman's thoughts went through her mind, but when the bottom of the hill was reached, and she came up to the boy, she took his arm and walked beside him in dignified silence. For some reason they could not have explained, they had both got from their silent evening together the thing needed. Man or boy, woman or girl, they had for a moment taken hold of the thing that makes the mature life of men and women in the modern world possible.